This is the Lang Money Hour, where Smart Money talks on KQV with expert advice from CPA, attorney, and retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang, best-selling author of Retire Secure and The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once, Then Never Again. Now on air and worldwide, paytaxeslater.com. Now get ready to talk smart money.
And welcome to the Lang Money Hour. I'm Dan Weinberg, along with CPA and attorney Jim Lang. Regular listeners have heard us talk over the years about Jim's book, Retire Secure. And now the third edition of Retire Secure is on the way. It'll be coming out in the next couple of months. And tonight we're going to tell you about some of the new information you'll be able to find in this updated edition. Now, since publication of the last edition in 2009, there have been plenty of tax law changes, and they have challenged Jim and his team to revamp the advice they give to retirees on a number of different topics. Specifically, some of those changes mean that IRA and retirement plan owners need to shift their focus from worrying about estate taxes to worrying about income taxes. And that's just one of the things we'll be talking about on the program tonight. We'll also touch on Jim's updated advice on Roth IRA conversions, some new tax saving strategies, and mapping out your estate plans. And we'd love to take your calls and answer your specific questions about these and other retirement and estate planning topics. So if you'd like to join us, please give us a call at 412-333-9385. That's 333-9385. And with that, let's say good evening to Jim Lang.
Well, thank you, Dan. So I thought what we could do today is to talk about some of the new features, but also to maybe review a couple of the more important things that I talk about in the book. But the first point that you brought out, and perhaps for many people, actually a new paradigm or a new way of looking at things. In the old days, and particularly when the exemption amount, that is the amount that you were allowed to die with, without having any federal estate or federal transfer tax, was $600,000. A lot of people had more than $600,000, so this became a concern. And people drafted wills and trusts and strategized on how to avoid estate taxes after both the husband and the wife, if you're married, died. And that was the emphasis for a lot of planning. I'm really more of an IRA guy, IRA, retirement plan, 401k, 403b. So most of my clients probably have more money in their IRAs and retirement plans than outside their IRA and retirement plans. And that's the group that I tend to write to. And that's also the group that these strategies tend to be the most effective with. So I've always been interested in the income taxes, both while you are working, while you are retired and you're going into your portfolio to meet your monthly expenses, and then also even after you die. So what is now much, much different than, say, it was when I wrote the first edition of Retire Secure in 2006? Well, now we have, if you are married, we have a $10.6 million federal estate exemption. This assumes a few things called portability, but to oversimplify, if the planning is done right, and even just a minimal amount of planning, a husband and wife can now shield $10.6 million from federal estate tax. So unless you have more than $10.6 million, and I'm going to take the liberty of assuming that most of our listeners do not, and will probably never grow their estates to $10.6 million, federal estate tax is not really a worry. What's really a worry, and I would say it's an even bigger worry, is federal income tax. So remember, if you have an IRA or a 401k or a 403b or some type of retirement plan, remember, nobody has yet paid income tax on that money. Now, you might end up paying tax on that money, and you might do it hopefully after retirement, and even hopefully in the later part of your retirement. Or it's possible that you will never spend that money, and if you die with an IRA or a 401k or a 403b, your heirs will have to pay income tax on that money. Now, there's different rules, and we'll get into when they're going to have to pay tax. But the point is there is going to be an income tax on IRA money, And if people are interested in reducing their taxes, and who these days is not interested in reducing their taxes, they should be concentrating on income taxes, not estate taxes. And that's really one of the biggest paradigm shifts. So we could talk more about some of the ways to avoid that. We can talk about Roth IRA conversions. We can talk about the new tax law that we fear is coming. But the big paradigm shift and the big thing that people have to keep in mind is we have a different game now. And the game is saving income taxes, not estate taxes. So that's really the first thing that we should be thinking about. And
it looks like we have a caller. It is Cindy on line one. Cindy, good evening.
Hi. I'm calling from Malvern, PA. And I have a question about my particular situation. My husband and I are both 64, and we're both retired. We have a lot of money in our IRAs, and we have plenty of after-tax money, too. And I just wondered what, Jim, you recommend for what we do as far as, like, Roth IRA conversions with our Social Security.
Okay, well, can I ask you one or two questions so I can make sure that I'm giving you the right advice?
Yes.
All right, when you said you had, quote, plenty of money in the after-tax or money that you've already paid tax on, so we're talking about money that is not an IRA, not a 401k, not a 403b. Do you have enough money, and I think it would be too confidential to ask you how much, but do you have enough money that you could picture living between now and when you are age 70 on the money that you have outside your IRAs?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so why don't we do, and is either you or your husband enjoy health or good enough health that it is likely that one of you will live till 77 or beyond?
Hopefully, yes.
Okay, hopefully, yes. All right. All right, so there's two real issues here. And by the way, it's so wonderful that we're talking when you're 64 instead of age 70. If you told me the same fact pattern, but you're age 70, most of the strategies that I'm going to recommend for you right now would not work. And what I would say is, if you actually did a calculation, depending on what assumptions you use and how much money you have, the difference between, let's say, the status quo is both of you take your Social Security now, which would, in effect, reduce the amount that you're going to get for the rest of your life, and you wouldn't make any Roth IRA conversions. So let's call that the status quo. And I'm going to bet that the difference between the status quo, given the identical investments, so this isn't an investment question, this is a strategy question. Given the identical investments, I actually think that you're going to be at least $100,000, maybe $200,000 or $300,000 better off because of this advice. And if you're going to count the benefits to the next generation or even the next two generations, in some variations, the difference can literally be measured in at least hundreds of thousands, if not millions. All right, so let's take a look at the big picture. All right, when one or both of you are working, you are, let's say, in a higher tax bracket because you had income from your earnings. And now, other than, let's say, Social Security, which let's call it optional between now and 70, and other than IRA distributions, which also are optional between now and 70, because remember, you don't have to take minimum required distributions. You don't have to take your Social Security. Now, you will have interest and dividends, etc., on the money from the after-tax portion of your portfolio, but that shouldn't be all that substantial. So if you don't take Social Security and you don't take money from your IRA or your retirement plans, then your projected income tax rate between now and age 70 is going to be very low, maybe even in the 10% bracket. All right, so what does this mean? This means, now, let's, again, I'm not going to ask you how much is in each of these accounts, because that's a little personal, but let's take a look at what's going to happen when you're age 70. When you're age 70, what's going to happen is you're both going to have minimum required distributions from your IRAs, which will be roughly maybe 4% of the value of the IRA, and then it gets worse and worse. That is, the minimum required distribution becomes higher and higher as you age. In addition, you will both be taking your Social Security, because there's no benefit to waiting for Social Security after age 70. So here's the point, Cindy. You're going to be in a high tax bracket at age 70, whether you like it or not. And your tax bracket between age 64 and 70 is, to a large extent, optional. So you could take IRA distributions and pay tax on it. Part of the advice that I do provide in, and by the way, this is classic advice. This went to all three of my books, or all three editions of Retire Secure. It was always pay taxes later. So I'm not a big fan of you taking money out of your IRA, paying tax on it, and spending that money, because it's going to cost you $1.40 to take out a dollar from your IRA, or I'm sorry, to spend a dollar, and then your portfolio is going to be depleted by 40 cents over and above the dollar that you need to spend. If you take it from money that you've already paid tax on, and you already said that you have plenty of money, then your portfolio is only going to be depleted by a dollar, meaning that extra 40 cents is available for taxes, dividends, I'm sorry, is available for investments. So I don't want you to spend your IRA dollars first. I want you to spend the after-tax dollars first. But since you're going to be in a very low tax bracket, it's going to really be an interesting exercise to determine how much of a Roth IRA conversion you should make. Now, off the top of my head, and the right answer is you have to run numbers to determine the ideal amount. But off the top of my head, it looks like we have low tax brackets between 64 and 70, high tax bracket at 70. What we should be thinking of is getting in most of, or maybe even all of, your Roth IRA conversions while you're in a low tax bracket. And since we don't want to, you know, really clobber you in any one year and get into a very high tax bracket because you do such a big Roth IRA conversions, that a series of Roth IRA conversions might be a good strategy. So again, I don't want to commit myself to the right number without, and our firm, of course, we run the numbers. In other words, we model it. So let's say one example, we would do no Roth IRA conversions and do projections for 30 years. Another one, we might do Roth IRA conversions of, say, $10,000 or $20,000, or maybe go to the top of the 10% bracket and then run that forward for 10 or 20 years or 30 years. Then we might do the same thing, but we might look at going to the top of the 25% bracket or the top of the 15% bracket, which might even be better. And then we might look at weighting some of the earlier years heavier. But anyway, without getting into all those details, one strategy that I think would be very good would be to do a series of Roth IRA conversions that would keep you in a low tax bracket. The advantage of the Roth would be it would grow income tax-free for the rest of your life, the rest of your husband's life, and if the taxes will stay the same, the rest of your children's and even grandchildren's lives. So that's the first answer, okay? I would be thinking...
I need to have money to pay for the conversion with the after-tax money?
Yes. In fact, you already said that you had plenty of after-tax dollars.
Yeah.
So let's just say, for discussion's sake, you made a $30,000 Roth IRA conversion. And let's say the tax on that would be, let's just even say, at the 15% bracket. So what would that be? $30,000 times, so let's say it be somewhere in the ballpark of $4,500. I would want, that would be the tax on a $30,000 conversion. I would want you to pay that tax from money from outside of the IRA, all right?
Okay.
So you could get, in effect, $30,000 of money that is right now fully taxable into a Roth IRA, and then once you have that money there, it grows income tax-free for the rest of your life. Now, if you didn't have the money to pay the tax from outside of the IRA, then I'm not such a big fan of making a Roth IRA conversion. My normal rule of thumb is if you don't have the money to pay the tax on the conversion from a source that is outside of your IRA, it's probably not worth doing. It might be. We actually had a radio show on that exact topic, but let's not get too carried away. In general, I would be interested in having you make a series of Roth IRA conversions, preferably at a low tax bracket, and paying the tax on that conversion from outside the IRA. Okay? You with me so far?
Yes.
All right. See, one of the problems is there's no simple question, particularly if you're going to try to explain why. And what I have found is that virtually all my clients, they don't want just the answer, they want why. Because I tend to get a lot of quantitative types and a lot of people who, frankly, it might come as a shock to our listeners, but not everybody trusts everything that a lawyer or a financial advisor says. So they want to see the proof. So that's why when we run numbers, we actually have the client in the room while we're running the numbers. So that way the client can see what we're doing, and they are more likely to be on board with it because they see it. And the other reason we like to have the client in the room is because we can have the client do their own what-ifs. Well, what if I did this? What if I spent that? What if I bought a vacation home? What if I, one client said, what if I buy a plane? And their wife said, don't you run that number. So we have, we're a big fan of running the numbers. So running the numbers for Roth would be one of the things. But the other interesting potential strategy you have is you have a number of very interesting options for your IRA and or your, I'm sorry, not only for your IRA, but also for Social Security. So I assume that you'd rather take Social Security early, right? Because that way you're sure you can get it. Is that fair?
Right.
Or, all right. And that's the way most people think. You know, oh, the government's going to go out of business. The Social Security is going to get bankrupt, blah, 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 blah. Here's the problem. And I'm going to oversimplify a little bit. Technically, it's from 66 on, but I'll oversimplify. For every year that you wait, and when I say you, I'm going to assume we're talking about the spouse with the higher income earnings record. So let's use the old sexist paradigm where it's the husband. I'm not even going to ask you because that's not fair. So let's assume for discussion's sake that your husband worked for more years at a higher rate, and if he takes it at 64, whatever that number is, I'm going to oversimplify and say if he waited between 64 and 70, what would happen is he would actually get an 8% raise in his benefit for every year that he waits. Okay? Now, this ends up being very, very substantial. It's not quite double, but plus the cost of living, by the way. So you might say, well, gee, what if we die early and we don't make it to age 77, which in this calculation with a husband and wife and using a strategy that I'm interested in called apply and suspend, we could consider doing this apply and suspend strategy. And if you do both die early, it is true your family will end up with less money. And Cindy, I don't know how to say it nicely, but if you both die early, then you're dead. And you shouldn't be fearing an early death for financial planning purposes. What you should be fearing is living a long time and outliving your money. And when you run the numbers to get that extra 8% bonus, is really about the cheapest type of insurance that you can get. No insurance company would give you anywhere near as favorable an implicit rate as the IRS. So one of the things that we might consider is having the spouse with the higher earnings record wait until 70. Now, does that mean that you're not going to have either of you get any money until 70? No. And does that mean that your husband, if he's the one with the higher earnings record, should do nothing when they turn 66? No. So here's a strategy that will most likely serve you best. I would consider having your husband do something called apply and suspend at age 66, at full retirement age. What apply and suspend is that he applies for Social Security, but he says, don't pay me now. So what's the difference between applying and suspending, meaning I apply for it, but say, don't pay me now, and then just doing nothing? The difference is if your husband applies and suspends, then what you can do is you can file for a spousal benefit. All right? So he's 66. You're 66 in this example. And what can happen is he applies for Social Security. I'll oversimplify. I'm not going to get into the differences in months. But he applies for Social Security. He suspends, so he's not collecting anything, and he still is keeping his 8% raises per year. Now, you apply for a spousal benefit when you're 66. That means you would get half of what he is entitled to at 66. Now, here's the really cool thing about that. So let's just make up a number. Let's say that his benefit would be $30,000 a year. So now you're collecting $15,000 a year as a spousal benefit. But here's what's really nice. The $15,000 a year that you're collecting does not hurt your husband at all. In fact, he continues to get his 8% raises every single year from 66 to 70, and the fact that you're collecting on his record doesn't hurt him at all. Then, when you're both 70, then we take a look to see which one is higher. Half of his, which is what you've been collecting all along, or yours. And here's the beauty of what has part of this strategy called apply and suspend. Your Social Security goes up by 8% for every year between 66 and 70, even though you're collecting half of a benefit. So if you combine the strategies, and then we're getting even a little bit more complicated, but if you combine the strategies, we believe it is a synergistic, that is, the sum of the parts is greater than the whole. I'm sorry, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. We can end up with literally a situation where you guys are at least 100,000. And by the way, some of the numbers I've run, it's literally hundreds of thousands of dollars better off. So regardless of investment choices, although obviously, you know, we're usually fans of low-cost index investing, there's some very interesting strategies that are available to you and your spouse. So I hope, does that help?
That's great. Yeah, it sounds like free money.
All right. Well, free money is a good way to look at it. And one of the things that you might consider doing if you're interested in learning a little bit about let's say our upcoming book and some of the strategies, is we can give you a website where you can get a 4-page report and all kinds of videos. Maybe I'll ask Dan to do that before break.
That's right. And Cindy, thanks so much for the call. By the way, anybody else who'd like to give us a call, plenty of time for your questions and comments tonight, 412-333-9385. And as Jim mentioned, if you'd like to sign up to find out when the new edition of Retire Secure becomes available, get a 4-page summary of the best strategies in the book and some free videos as well, go to retiresecurebook.com.
Dan, one of the things that you mentioned was, and that I think is on a lot of people's minds, is what is the best way to prepare your estate? Actually, you know something? I was about to go into that, but we have another call. And
very frankly,
by the way, just like in the workshops, and I mean this sincerely, the favorite part for me of the workshops is the calls. So I think we have Bob from Sarasota.
Go ahead, Bob. You're on.
Okay. Mr. Lang, I've been following your books, and I'm very interested in Roth IRAs for my grandchildren. And I'm wondering what dangers you see in the near future or in the distant future to the continued existence of this stretching feature of the Roth IRAs.
Well, you stole some of my thunder, Bob, because I was going to talk about this. This is a very serious issue for guys like you. All right, so let's talk about what the existing law is, and let's talk about what the potential law is, and let's talk about the difference between what you should be doing now and what you should be thinking of. All right, so if you mentioned Roth IRA for a grandchild, can I take it that you already have a Roth IRA and that there's a reasonable chance that you're not going to spend it during your lifetime?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
But the trust is not written yet. We're working on that.
Okay. All right. So, and how old are your grandchildren right now?
They range in age from 2 to 11.
Okay. All right. So, first of all, you are absolutely right. You should have a trust. And if you're planning to leave the Roth IRA to your grandchildren, it is critical that you have a trust drafted for their benefit, because otherwise they can have a party on your money at 21, and I don't think that that's the intent. In fact, under the existing law, this is what I would love to see for your Roth IRA. Under the existing law, as you probably know, there's no minimum required distribution. I'm not going to ask you how much is in the Roth IRA. That's a little personal. Let's just use a nice round number like $100,000. So let's say there was $100,000 in a Roth IRA, and let's assume for discussion's sake that you have money from outside the IRA that is either after-tax dollars or even traditional IRA dollars, or you might have income from Social Security or from some other source, maybe a pension, that you don't need to spend the Roth IRA.
That's right.
Okay. So right now we have no minimum required distributions, and that money under existing law can continue to grow income tax free from now until the day you die. Are you married, Bob?
Yes.
All right. Let's assume for discussion's sake, since you're the guy, we're going to pick on guys today, and actuarially we guys are likely to live 7 years less than our same age spouse. Let's assume that you die first and you leave your IRA to your wife. And usually people want to take care of, they want to make sure that their spouse is okay before they leave money to a grandchild. Although interestingly enough, I'd actually like to give your wife the choice, but let's not get into that for this question. So then what we would do is we would name your, let's say your wife is the primary beneficiary of the IRA, and then assuming we're going to skip the children, and that's another discussion that we could have, but I want to get to the change of the law. What would happen is you would die, leave the money to your wife. Your wife would eventually die, leave the money to children. Let's assume the children are young enough that it's still in a trust, or maybe some of them are beyond the time they need a trust. And under the existing law, all right, so let's say that by the time you and your wife are gone, that IRA, let's say that you two live, let's say 20 years, and let's say the money was invested at, say, 7%. So that $100,000 Roth IRA will now be $400,000.
Cool.
All right. Now, now you're going to say, where'd you get 7%? I mean, that's another question for another day. But let's assume that there's $400,000 and it's divided. And let's keep it simple. Let's say you have four grandchildren. Each grandchild gets $100,000. Under the existing law, what that grandchild could do is they could continue the tax-free growth on that Roth IRA. Now, they would have to take what's called a minimum required distribution of the inherited Roth IRA. So to simplify, let's say that one of the grandchildren is 30 years old at the time. Let's assume that their life expectancy, according to the tables, is roughly 50 years. Then what they could do is they would be required to take out 2%, that is 50 divided by the balance, which is 2% of the inherited Roth IRA. Now, that money will be income tax-free. Now, next year, the following year, they would take 49 and divide that into the balance of the inherited Roth IRA. The following year, 48 into the balance of the inherited Roth IRA. So
Where did you find those numbers? 48.
Well, actually, I made them up, but where you can find them is in publication 590. Mm-hmm. All right, there's lots of websites that have that. Mm-hmm. And publication 590 has different factors. They have factors for you and your wife. They have factors if you are married to somebody who is 10 years younger. And then they have factors for beneficiaries. So this is the beneficiary factor.
I see.
And I just picked simple numbers to make the math easy. Okay? So I said that, you know, he was 30 and with a 50-year life expectancy. It's probably a little bit longer than that. But that's the general idea. Now, if he doesn't need the money, or he doesn't need it soon after you and your wife die, under existing law, he can continue to defer those tax-free distributions to some extent for the rest of his life. So literally, the fact that if you made a $100,000 Roth conversion, there are variations that he is literally millions and millions of dollars better off all your grandchildren would be literally millions and millions of dollars better off because you made that conversion. And even if you adjust for inflation, they still are, depending on what assumptions you use, maybe $500,000, maybe $800,000 better off, even in today's dollars. So this is a great thing under existing tax law. All right, now let me tell you the bad news. The bad news is I fear that they're going to change this law, and I think I have some pretty good reasons to fear it. First, let me tell you how bad it will be, and then let me tell you why I think there's a good chance of it being changed. If the new law that has been proposed and voted on, that narrowly, we literally dodged a bullet, if that is passed, the new law will say everything's going to be the same for you. Everything's going to be the same for your wife. But after you're both gone, rather than the children being able to defer the Roth IRA or distributions on the Roth IRA for the rest of their lives, at least to some extent, they would have to take all the money out in 5 years. Now, since it's a Roth, it won't be taxable. But instead of getting, let's say, an extra 50 years of tax-free growth after you and your wife die, your grandchildren might only get 5 years.
Uh-huh.
If you leave them a traditional IRA, it's basically the same thing, except with the inherited IRA, they would still have to take a minimum required distribution of the inherited IRA. It would be taxable. Under existing law, they can stretch or defer the vast majority of the taxes for many, many years, but under the proposed law, they would have to take the entire inherited IRA and pay tax on it within 5 years of your and your wife's death.
That's for both Roth and traditional.
Yeah, that's right. So,
all right,
now here's why I fear that this will likely happen. First of all, President Obama wants it. And you might say, well, gee, aren't the Republicans going to save us? And actually, no, because in 2013, this came up for a vote. President Obama wanted it. The Republican House wanted it. And it was actually the Democratic Senate that said no. But now we have a Republican Senate that will likely say yes. We have a Republican House that will likely say yes. We have a president that will likely say yes. And I really fear that this is going to come up in the next couple years, and they're going to change the law, and it's going to be pretty miserable for people like you who have been prudent all your lives and saved some money and even converted to Roths with the idea that this can be a wonderful tax-free legacy to your family.
Oh.
All right. So now the question might become, well, how would I change my planning knowing that this potential law is on the horizon.
Yes.
What I would do is I might be a little bit more conservative about how much money I would convert to a Roth. So I'll give you an example. Let's say if I knew that we were going to keep the existing laws, and let's say that we figured out, we ran numbers for Roth IRA conversions and determined how much you could convert, but it turned out the numbers that we used, you were actually a little bit worse off during your lifetime because we were so interested in what was going to happen to your children and even grandchildren that I wasn't so, you know, let's say you were maybe $10,000, $20,000, $50,000 worse off. If your grandchildren were going to be hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars better off, you might have said, well, that's okay because I can afford to be a little bit worse off if they can be much, much, much better. Well, now, if they're going to have to pay tax on the whole thing in a traditional, or if they're going to have to take all the money out of the Roth within 5 years of yours and your wife's death, then I don't want to make a calculation where you and your wife might be worse off. So I'm still a Roth IRA advocate for most people, but I might be more conservative as to how much money I should recommend that you can convert.
And I have a question of clarification to what you
said. Fair enough.
It's been my impression that Republicans tend to do whatever you can to lower taxes, and yet these moves that you're expecting by the Republican Senate and House seem to me to be just the opposite, not lowering taxes. Why is it that Republicans are opposed to this system? I can understand why Democrats might be, but not Republicans.
Well, I had that exact same question, and here's the answer that I was given, that the Republicans want to lower taxes in general, and in order to pay for that reduction in taxes, they are trying to take away the tax goodies, if you will. And this stretch IRA or this stretch Roth IRA is considered, say, a tax goodie. So this might be a method of simplifying and reducing taxes for everybody. But frankly, it comes at the expense of longtime savers. So the other thing is, from a personal standpoint, I've done about 2,000 estate plans where the stretch IRA and the stretch Roth IRA has been a major planning component. And very frankly, was going to probably might be my most significant legacy. And now that legacy is seriously threatened. But I did want to talk about actually two other things before we call it a day, because this is very important. Let's assume, and let's not get into why we want to leave it to grandchildren instead of children, although that's another interesting discussion. All right, so right now these grandchildren are young, and unfortunately, when you do estate planning, you have to take into account the possibility that something could happen to you and your wife, and then boom, these Roth IRAs would go to your grandchildren. If you don't have a trust, what would happen under Florida law, which by the way would be pretty much the same as any state law, except there might be a different, quote, age of majority that might be 18 or 21. But what would happen is there would be somebody appointed to watch over that money and dole it out to the grandchildren, presumably as needed, until they are either 18 or 21, depending on the law of the state. And then there would be no restriction, meaning that that your grandkids could, you know, go out, find out about the money, withdraw all the money, go out, buy a Maserati, go out on a drinking binge, go out and, you know, have some drugs and sex and rock and roll and everything else on your dollar, which somehow I suspect is not really the purpose that you saved that money for them. Is that fair?
That's correct.
All right. So, and the other thing is right now they're too young for you to know if they're going to be responsible kids or not. And even if they are, you know, 21 is pretty young these days. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend that rather than just leaving it outright to them, that there be what's called a testamentary trust. Now, a testamentary trust means that it is a trust that doesn't take effect. It has no power. There's no money in it until you and your wife die. So during your lifetime, it's 100% your money. You could do whatever you want. You could spend it. You could burn it. You could invest it, whatever you want. Then if you die and you name your wife your primary beneficiary, she would have the same power. Again, whatever she wants. But after both of you are gone, and let's assume that your children, your grandchildren are still young enough that they would fall under the terms of the trust, you might have a trust that says something like, now you might vary it for individual purposes and your own preferences, but I'll give you a starting point. The trust is to be invested, and the income from the trust, or the minimum required distribution of the inherited IRA or the inherited Roth IRA, will be distributed to the beneficiary. And the beneficiary, the trustee, is empowered to go into the trust for principal for health, maintenance, support, and education. So now we have a trustee who, if I didn't, without knowing better, I would want it to be one of your children. I don't want it to be an attorney. I don't want it to be a bank. I'd like it to be a family member that you trust, that would invest the money for the benefit of your grandchildren and then dole it out as appropriate. It's really important that if you do this, that you go to an attorney that knows what they're doing, because there's six specific conditions that trust must meet in order, I'm getting a little technical now, to qualify as a designated beneficiary. So you don't want to just go to any attorney. You want to go to an attorney who is very used to drafting trusts as beneficiaries of IRAs. And if you were to do that, then if they don't change the law, you're very likely to get the result that you want, which is long-term tax-free growth for your Roth, and maybe even long-term tax-deferred growth for your traditional IRA. Now, most attorneys don't do a good job of drafting trusts for the benefit of grandchildren when the underlying asset is an IRA. And actually, the Wall Street Journal came out with an article that said, don't draft a trust. And I thought, and by the way, Bruce Steiner, who's an estate attorney from New York, we both, the same day, wrote letters to the Wall Street Journal saying, no, you gave the wrong advice. The advice should not be don't draft a trust. It should just be find an attorney that knows what they're doing, that knows how to draft that trust. So that would be my indicated course for you to have that. You said you're in the process of getting that done, and I think that's great, and hopefully the attorney that you've chosen is experienced and diligent and will properly draft that trust. I do like the idea of naming your spouse first, because I never ever want to not completely protect the spouse. Now, normally what we tend to do under the classic Lang's cascading beneficiary plan is, rather than naming your grandchildren after your wife, is we would typically name your children and then give your children the choice of whether they want to keep the inherited IRA or the inherited Roth IRA for themselves, or whether they want to, the legal word is disclaim the IRA. But if they disclaim it, instead of just disclaiming it to nowhere, they literally have a well-drafted trust to disclaim into where they can be the beneficiary. Now, you might prefer just skipping that generation, or you might prefer leaving some each, or you might prefer giving that generation the option. And if you have more than one child, you might have different children making different choices. So one child might say, yes, I'd like to keep it all, I need it. And the other child might say, well, no, I don't need it. It's worth more to the grandchild, so I'll disclaim it. And then another child might say, well, I'll keep half and disclaim half.
Does your new book tell how to make one of these trusts?
Well, it sure does. Now, it's not going to have the detail that you could just do this yourself, but it does have a discussion of our classic estate plan, which is called Lang's Cascading Beneficiary Plan. And if you like that flexible approach that I just mentioned, that would be the it'd be a good source for you. Also, the four-page summary has that also.
Well, as I see it, the difference between what we have now and what we would have if Congress does what you expect it to do is that all the RMDs would have to be collected within 5 years, but they would still stay in the trust under the control of the trustee.
That's right. Very good. Very good.
Okay.
All right. But okay. But so you can see why, obviously, it would be better if we could use the existing law. Unfortunately, some people say, well, am I grandfathered by the fact that I have it set up before they change the law? And unfortunately, the answer is no. And the price for getting it grandfathered might be a little bit too high. Do you want to know what the price is, though?
Yes.
You have to die. I am getting the look from Dan Weinberg. So I assume that we are done.
Well, we've got about a minute left if you have any closing thoughts. Bob, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you very much for the information.
I appreciate it.
I'll get a copy of your new book.
All right, great. Thank you, Bob.
Now, I'm not trying to be somebody promoting your book on the side. I really am interested in what you said, and I think it was very helpful.
Well, Bob, I never mind when a caller promotes my book. Bob from Sarasota. By the way, Sarasota is a beautiful town in Florida with lots of artistic things. They have concerts and art galleries and all kinds of things. I have a cousin that lives in Sarasota. I just saw him last winter. So anyway, and by the way, the book is really national in scope. I'm obviously a Pennsylvania practitioner with a law firm, a CPA firm, and an investment advisory firm located in Pittsburgh. And what we tend to do for our local clients is give them the option of tax preparation, will preparation. Our office actually does all the strategies, the Roth, the Social Security, that stuff. Then we work with PJ Denuso, who uses low-cost index funds to invest the money, and then together we charge, rather than each of us charging a fee, we charge 1% or less, depending on how much money is invested.
All right, great information tonight, and we've been talking about the new edition of Retire Secure, the third edition of Jim's book. Now, if you would like to learn more about this, go to retiresecurebook.com, and there you can sign up to be notified when the book is available, which hopefully will be in the next month or two, right?
Probably yes. Two.
Okay, 2 months. You can also get a four-page summary of the best strategies contained in the book, as well as some free videos. Again, that is retiresecurebook.com. I'm Dan Weinberg, and for Jim Lang, thanks so much for listening. We'll see you again for another edition of the Lang Money Hour.
Thanks for listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Check out the show archives and listen on demand anytime at paytaxeslater.com. KQB listeners can receive free tickets to Jim Lang's Pittsburgh area workshops and more. Call the Lang Financial Group at 412-521-2732 to reserve your seats and meet Jim Lang in person, or visit paytaxeslater.com. That's paytaxeslater.com.